Okay, thank you. Let's move on to our next discussion topic, which is enhancing the existing requirements related to communicating management's judgments and estimates. As you've focused on yesterday afternoon and again this morning, judgments and estimates are very important these days, especially as financial reporting frameworks provide for an increasing number of fair value measurements and as we reflect on the events of the recent financial crisis. The existing standard currently requires that the auditor ensure the audit committee is informed about management's process for formulating particularly sensitive accounting estimates and about the basis for the auditor's conclusions regarding the reasonableness of these estimates. This brings us to our next question, which deals with whether or not the board should enhance the auditor's required communications in this area. So the first question on this topic is, should the required communication regarding management's judgments and estimates be enhanced to report additional information on the judgments and estimates? And if so, what information would be useful to the audit committees? Greg Jonas?
One of my favorite topics.
Were the SEC to act on the CFIR committee recommendation on the judgment framework, and were the board to incorporate those outstanding ideas into the audit literature, it would then be a natural follow-on to incorporate those ideas into the discussion between the auditor and the client, and in particular the audit committee. Of the 12 ideas in the judgment framework, my three favorites, and they're three favorites because I think they are the ones that are typically not often done, are the following. Discussions about judgments, it's easy to focus on what was decided and why. But the essence of the discussion should be on what could have been picked that gave a very different answer but was not, and why. So it's the notion of what were the waterfront of alternatives, reasonably possible alternatives that were considered, and why did you reject them? And then when you justify to the audit committee why a certain estimate was picked within the range of alternatives, the essence of that discussion should be to reconcile the pick to third-party views and data. It's easy to be introspective about all this stuff. We picked it because of the following internally focused reasons. The challenge is to focus it on we picked it because of the following third-party views or data, and in particular, investor interests in data. So we picked it because it best displays the economics of the transactions to investors. Here's why. That discussion is rare and is, in my book, the key of the 12 elements in the judgment framework.
Thank you. Joe Cartello?
This question doesn't specifically ask about other communications that might be helpful to audit committees. So if you'd allow me, let me just throw some other things out to consider. And again, I'm torn as to whether you put this in a standard or, I'd like to think auditors and audit committees are doing this. But just some things to think about that I think would be helpful. Status of management efforts related to remedying material weaknesses, significant deficiencies, and management letter comments. I chair an audit committee of a not-for-profit, nothing like the major public companies in this room, but we've had material weaknesses, and so we try to follow up on that. I think that's important. An evaluation of the CEO, CFO, chief accounting officer, internal auditor, as it relates to their competence and objectivity. I think the external auditor is in a good position to have an opinion on that. Observations regarding other disclosures. Keep in mind, as an audit committee member, I'm still a board member, so I'm signing the 10-K. So, and the external auditor has to read the whole 10-K. So what about the disclosures in the MD&A? What about the disclosures in the CD&A? They probably have an opinion on that. The disclosures elsewhere in the 10-K, I hope they read the proxy statement. I hope they read press releases, particularly about earnings releases. So what do the disclosures in that look like? Observations regarding risk management. I mean, that's arguably why our economy has imploded. And that is, at least on the New York Stock Exchange, a charge to the audit committee. And so what's the external auditor's opinion on that? And then observations regarding compensation plans and the incentives that they create. There's an extensive literature that incentives, management incentives, can create perverse behavioral consequences as it relates to financial reporting. And again, I would think that a bright auditor would have some opinion on that, and that as an audit committee member, I'd at least like to hear their opinion.
Thank you, Joe. Kurt Schott.
Thank you. I was just going to mention, and Jamie alluded to this a little bit earlier, but if you look at your page 5 of your briefing to us, and I think it lists the 10 or so elements of your standard 380, I was struck by the difference in the language of the two that I think are the most significant there, significant accounting policies and management judgments and accounting estimates, and it says you should determine that the audit committee is informed, and you go through the rest of the standards and it says the auditor should inform. I'm just curious as to why that should be different, and in the spirit of questions 4 and 5, it seems to me that they should be all the same, that the auditor should inform.
Okay, thank you. I mean, I guess I'd let Jennifer comment as well, but it's my understanding there might be some slight difference in the language as they weren't developed. Those 2 points you mentioned in particular weren't developed at the same point in time. And I think in some respects it's the emphasis that management should be communicating to some extent these discussions.
I don't think I can have that much to add. I mean, we adopted the standard from the AICPA, and I wasn't involved in all the deliberations that went into AU 380 or the amendments that have been made to it. But, you know, as part of our process, we are looking at the standard in its entirety and what should the language be, what's going to be the best to drive the communication. So, you know, hearing a preference toward some language versus others. Jamie had some, I thought, some good suggestions as well regarding some of the language. That's what we're interested in hearing, that feedback.
Quickly then, I mean, what's to ensure that management has actually informed on these issues and that the audit committee actually understands some of the, you know, the material decisions made, that this sort of, you wanted some check and balance on management's ability to choose policies, and if that's not communicated well to the audit committee and we're simply thinking that the management has communicated that to the audit committee, I'm not sure that, you know, that's where investors want that to reside, that there should be an interesting check and balance on that, and that the auditor ought to be informing the audit committee of what they observed in these particular areas. And it's great that they've already been informed by the management, but I think it's also incumbent upon the audit committee to hear what the auditor thinks about those.
Right. I see Randy's card up or down, and Wayne, be interested in hearing some of the auditor's perspective on how you view this language and their communication
requirement. I'm waffling here, obviously. I was not on the auditing standards board, so I'm not sure I can tell you exactly what drove it. I take it to mean that, again, the financial reporting process includes management and auditors and the audit committee. And unlike most of these other bullets, it would be pretty normal that management might inform the audit committee about how it accounts for significant accounting estimates. But the role of the auditor to make sure that they did so, they were certain that it took place, and I would think in practice would amplify or add to and share views. So I don't think it was to limit auditor communication, but I think it was just to reflect that that's a natural topic for management to also discuss with the audit committee, as opposed to others that particularly talk about the auditor's view on something. So I guess, you know, that's certainly something you could clarify or make sure both of those took place, or only require the auditor to do it in your standard. But I guess I would just, I mean, it makes sense to me that if you're talking about a company's accounting and financial reporting, that you also want the company's accountants involved in that discussion. I think that's all it means. I don't think there's anything more to it. Someone could go back to the auditing standards board and check, I think.
See, Wayne and Galen both have their cards up, so I don't know if you want to respond to this or something else. Yes? Go ahead, Wayne.
Yeah. there are several items in that listing that, that use different language. You know, some discuss, and some of the items where it says discuss, it's almost boilerplate in terms of the responsibility to other information. That is truly almost a boilerplate, and it says discuss. So I'm not sure the language means anything in terms of the difference. I would assume any one of these could engender a discussion versus just a one-way communication. And there was one area that is in the ISA that could probably be built into this when it comes to accounting management judgments and accounting estimates. And some of it may be subsumed in the one about quality in terms of being in the rough on either edge. And that's the possible indicators of management's bias in terms of developing the estimates. And if the auditor thinks that that might be here, that's kind of like the scorecard that Lynn had mentioned before, or the gauge as to whether it's to the left or to the right. But again, that may be subsumed in the quality of the entity's accounting principles or the application of the accounting principles also.
Galen?
Yeah, my preference would be more the discussion than the informing, although two-way street, and certainly that feedback needs to be there. In terms of the list, we already require a discussion of independence. I think it could be a little bit more specific, partner rotation. I think firm tenure should be on that list as well. How long has that firm been doing that audit? Auditor judgments about accounting principles, critical policies and practices in the financial statements as well as the annual report, the MD&A. Key performance indicators. I liked Lynn's idea of that matrix in the top five risk areas. Who is doing what? And I think these are things that the audit committee should be informed about, and the auditor should have that type of dialogue. I also believe that a discussion of the related parties, related party transactions, known related parties, site agreements, as well as subsequent events would be the types of things that I would hope to see in some sort of guidance that the auditor has.
Thank you very much, Galen. Doug Anderson?
Yeah, I just wanted to, on that page 5, when we have the various bullet points listed there, I think Wayne already addressed this in some way, but as you look at point 5 and it talks about really asking an auditor to comment on the quality of the accounting principles, and it doesn't describe very well what you mean by principles, it's just selection of it or application of it. But then you go back and you look at point number 3, and there it's kind of curious because it only asks the auditor to talk about the process that's being used, doesn't actually talk about the estimates themselves. And I think it would be a real upgrade to change 3, the third bullet, to read more like the 5th, and really apply that same thinking about the principles, apply that same thinking to the estimates that were used.
Thank you, Doug. Lynn Turner?
Back to what Kurt and Randy were thinking about. As I recall, the way this got in is the Blue Ribbon Panel on Audit Committees went first and came up with their 10 recommendations. And I think this may have actually been one of their recommendations. Once they came up with their recommendations, then the SEC and the Auditing Standards Board went into rulemaking together. And the ASB picked off the rulemaking from an auditor perspective, and we picked off, OCA actually picked off the rulemaking from the audit committee perspective and drove the two pieces together so we got consistent answers. But it really came out of that, and there was one particular private meeting that I recall Chuck Bowser, who sat on some audit committees, talked about the need to really get down and understand these judgments and how could you, you know, at the time we were having troubles with restructuring reserves and people weren't understanding them. We had the cookie jars and all. And so was how could you really oversee an audit if you're not getting into that? So let's get the auditors to tell us what they really think about these type of judgments and these estimates and whether these reserves are right, and that's what really turned around and drove this. Peggy can correct me if I was wrong because she was involved with the process, but I think that's how it turned around and came about and what the discussions were like in those meetings. I personally think, as we again heard at the Treasury Committee from some of the investors, they would like this to go the next step and see further disclosure then from the Audit Committee out to investors about that conversation as well. So that would be their next step.
Just had one follow-up that I was interested if any of the auditors had any reaction to the listing that Joe Carcello put out. There were at least a couple of items there that, I think several of them were very interesting. But some I wondered if you felt that it was within the scope of the auditor's responsibilities. I guess Joe talked about observations regarding risk management and laid on the table that some of the financial crisis as a result of poor risk management over position taking by financial institutions, et cetera. And maybe the auditor should comment on observations about risk management, observations about the competence of senior officers like the CEO. And I wondered if anybody had any reaction to that and how that fit in with the auditor's responsibilities regarding financial statements or internal controls over financial reporting. Wayne Collins.
I'll hail the easy one. In terms of the competence of the CEO and other accounting people, we get asked that question all the time in executive sessions. So I don't think that's anything that we have a problem in responding to.
Jim Schneider.
Thanks, Marty. I understand, the question and Wayne's point about we get the question all the time. I don't think it's something that should be a requirement. It's not necessarily in our area of expertise in terms of auditing the financial statements. So while we typically will respond to those types of questions, it's with the caveat that we're not experts in that area. And, it's simply our observation based on doing the audit. But it's not, we talked about experts this morning and core competency. That's not our core competency. In terms of we're not charged with evaluating, whether the CEO or the CFO is doing a good job.
Sam Marzillo.
I agree with Jim, and I thought some of Joe's list was overreaching. But it just, I guess as I listen to this conversation, it just seems to me there are places that I think the board can go to determine whether or not, indeed, there's a problem. There's a National Association of Corporate Directors. Almost every one of the larger firms has some form of an audit committee institute that's not just us and what we think, but audit committee members that get together and talk about being audit committee members. And it just seems to me that there's a wealth of information that we seem to be, and maybe I'm wrong, but most of what I'm hearing today is fairly anecdotal. Maybe some SAG members a year ago made a comment that there's a problem. I don't see the problem, but it just seems like to Joe's list, is that what an audit committee member, are they asking to see that and we're not providing it to them? I just think that there is a place that you can get some pretty rich information from corporate directors in a number of different forums, and then let's figure out if we indeed have a problem.
Good. Thanks for the input, Sam. Peggy Fran.
On that note, I suggest why don't you approach the NACD or another organization and ask them to do a survey. because you'll have some statistical information there. I think they cover several thousand board members and certainly a large number of audit committee members.
Thank you. If no one has anything else, let's go to our next question, which is somewhat specific, but we wanted to point out that the language in the current standard calls for the auditor to communicate or inform about the process in formulating particularly sensitive estimates. And our question to you was, should the requirements apply more broadly to all significant accounting estimates and judgments? Or in other words, what should be the trigger for this communication?
One of the comments I just heard from, I think the last comment was from Doug on this one. I think he was right on point, really, with this comment, saying this seemed to be a little limiting compared to some of the other required disclosures in terms of just inform about the process for formulating particularly sensitive accounting estimates. You thought that the language should be a little bit stronger, including such as judgments about the quality of the entity's accounting principles and things of that nature. So I gathered you were also thinking at this point here, five, when you made your comment a moment ago. Yes, thanks.
Jamie Miller?
Just a couple of thoughts on this one. I agree with Doug's point on process versus a more holistic view of the estimate and potentially sensitivities. But I guess the other words I would focus on in this quote are the particularly sensitive accounting estimates language and, you know, the ability of the auditor to use judgment about what they should be discussing with the committee, as opposed to, you know, a more broad definition of significant accounting estimates and judgments, which, you know, frankly, in today's environment, with the complexity of the current accounting standards, with fair value becoming much, much more prevalent and potentially even more so, you know, arguably everything we do today involves significant judgment and significant estimates. So I do think if we're going to move to a more broad definition, we have to have a way for people to define what does significant mean and how should they view it in the context of this. You know, otherwise, I think you could get into a situation where, again, it becomes boilerplate because you're just, frankly, discussing everything. As opposed to what's important.
Thank you. Wayne Collins?
Yeah, one thing in considering this particular issue, just advise to look to the ISA 260 that does require communication on the auditor's views about significant qualitative aspects of the entity's accounting practices, including accounting policies, estimates, and disclosures. Uses, you know, significant is the word that's used there, so just in terms of the consistency approach.
Thank you. Sam Renzilla?
I agree with Jamie, and I think the words were chosen carefully back when that was drafted to avoid just every, I mean, if you think about significant accounting estimates, they're embedded in just about every number in the financial statements. And I think the words particularly sensitive were added to provide the auditor with some judgment to stay away from the, while still a significant accounting estimate, the more mundane aspects of those judgments and get to the stuff, you know, the way I would interpret particularly sensitive is, what's the highest risk of material misstatement to the financial statements, and what should the audit committee know about those accounting estimates? So I think if you change the words, just be sensitive to sort of the layering of and what you want to achieve with respect to the communication with the audit committee.
Thank you, Sam. Well, let's fit in at least one more question before lunch. You know, we're running a little behind. Marty says we can get them all in, so.
No one's hungry, right?
Our next topic for discussion focuses on the increasing importance of disclosures to a reader's understanding of financial statements. The current disclosure requirements regarding fair value, variable interest entities, derivatives, and share-based compensation are extensive and complicated to compile, as well as critical to readers' understanding of the complexity and subjectivity of the related accounting measurements, as well as the risks associated with the related transactions and instruments. The current requirement for the auditor to communicate his or her view on the quality, not just the acceptability of the accounting principles, mentions that the discussion should include matters such as the clarity and completeness of the financial statements, which include financial disclosures. However, as the amount and complexity of disclosures increase, the board is determining whether or not to enhance the required communications to have specific requirements to discuss disclosures, which brings us to the next question. Should the auditor be required to discuss his or her assessment of the quality of disclosures in the financial statements with the audit committee? That looked like a tie, so we'll go with Greg Jonas.
Yes.
Lynn Turner?
The footnotes are such an integral part of the financial statements today. I would question any audit committee member, an auditor, who didn't have that discussion. The Blue Ribbon panel recommended that auditors talk about the quality of the financial information, accounting policies and all. To exclude the footnotes would be like excluding one of the most significant portions. And if I, as an institutional investor, knew an auditor wasn't talking to the audit committee about that portion of the financial statements, quite frankly, I'd be stunned and wonder whether or not we need to go get another auditor or another audit committee member.
Wayne?
This is another one where I quoted the part from ISA 260 that is in the ISA also. So from a consistency standpoint, I would support that.
Seems to be pretty strong views about the, Ted White.
Yeah, equally strong. I would just say emphatically yes. As usual, Greg said it much shorter and better than Lynn, right?
Lynn, are your cards still up, or just for the amen? There seems to be very strong views with respect to this issue regarding the importance of the auditor to discuss the quality of disclosures in the financial statements with the audit committee. We haven't heard any points to the contrary. Thanks, Bella. Jeff Mahoney?
I just wanted to agree with the others. As I mentioned earlier, particularly in the fair value measurements and the other areas that you mentioned, these having robust disclosures there are critical to investors. It mitigates some of the risks in connection with those estimates. It also helps investors assess the reliability of the reported, of the amounts that are reported in the face of the financial statements, and helps them determine whether those amounts should be adjusted or ignored. So I add yes to the previous yeses.
Jamie?
You know, one thing as I think about this, while I think in principle the answer here is yes, I think we also have to be careful to give the auditors guidance as to exactly what quality means. And what I mean there is you could take a company and completely fill out a disclosure checklist and get all of the right answers but still not have quality disclosures. And I think it's really important because the real evaluation here is going to be qualitative as opposed to a check-the-box mentality. And so that may mean additional guidance. It also may mean that when the FASB completes its disclosure framework project, you know, there's some important linkages there that the PCOB can build on, but it may be that you want to wait until that time before you do it.
Thanks, Jamie. Well, with such strong consensus and enthusiasm around this point for the auditors to be involved in discussing the quality of the disclosures and the financial statements, I think this is a good opportunity for us to take a break around our enthusiasm for this issue. And as we get ready to wrap up the communications with audit committees when we get back from lunch. So thanks for the very constructive dialogue on that point. Lunch is served.